couple of weeks ago, Mary asked me a question. She says, "Do you like the days of unleavened bread?" And I thought for a moment. I said, "Well, that's an easy question. Yes, I do. I like the days of unleavened bread." And yes, no questions are really easy to answer. She then followed it up with a why question. Now, why questions are much more difficult to answer because they require you to think. And so the why question she asked me, why do you like the days of unleavened bread? And so I said, oh, I have to think about this and ask this question in more detail. And so what I'm going to do in the sermon today, I'm going to answer that question when we get toward the end. But before we get to the end, I'd like to ask you a question and ask you to go back about 3,700 years as you think about this particular question. Do you think our forefather Jacob planned to stay in Egypt after the famine was over? You know the story. Do you think that Jacob was going to stay in Egypt after the famine that brought him there was over? Now, which famine was this? This was a famine that was in Egypt and Canaan and adjacent areas about 1700 B.C. And this famine was going to be so severe that God actually sent dreams to Pharaoh so that Pharaoh would know what was going to happen. And Mr. Palmer talked about dreaming, and Song of Solomon is a dream. Well, Pharaoh had a dream that was not as enjoyable as the Song of Solomon. He was dreaming that evening, and he saw the river, probably the Nile in his dream, and he noticed that seven very robust cows came out of that stream and stood there at the side of the river. And shortly thereafter, he noted that there were seven shriveled up, gaunt cows that came out of the river, and they ate the first seven. Well, he woke up from that dream and went back to sleep again. This is in Genesis 41. He went back to sleep again, and now he had another vision, another dream. This staff of grain came up, and there were seven heads on it that were fully formed. Lots of grain, quality grain. And then there were seven heads that were burned out, gnarled, not really grain. And they as well ate, in this case, the other grains. And so when Pharaoh awoke in that morning, he was very troubled about what he had dreamt. And so he wanted it interpreted. And the man who interpreted Pharaoh's dream, two dreams, was Joseph, the 11th son of Jacob, who had been living in Egypt at that time for 13 years. We all know the story of Joseph and how he got to Egypt and all that went on there. But he was now there. He'd been there 13 years. And Pharaoh was so impressed with what Joseph told him. What Joseph told him is, the dreams that you have, Pharaoh, God is telling you that there's going to be 7 years of plenty. In fact, an overabundance of crop. And then there will be 7 years of famine. And you've been told this in advance so you can prepare. And he went ahead and suggested to Pharaoh, what you need to do is you need to have someone, appoint someone, to handle the excess in the first years, to save it, so that in the remaining 7 years, you will have sufficient grain for Egypt. And so stockpile it. And in Genesis 41 and verse 39, Pharaoh then appoints Joseph. Look what happens. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, and that is no one as discerning and wise as you, you shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word, and only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." So the 7 good years began. They came. And Joseph did as Pharaoh had instructed him to do, and as he suggested that Pharaoh do, is the excess grain was brought into the storehouses. And the storehouses were filled up with grain. And then the famine years began. And Joseph, in his administration, proceeded to provide grain for the Egyptians and sell it to those in Canaan. Jacob's father, Joseph's father, Jacob, at this time lived in Canaan. And he was observant as to what was going on. And so I really like the way he speaks to his sons in Genesis 42 and verse 1. "And when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, 'Why do you look at one another?'" So you get the sense of these 11 guys are sitting around looking at each other. There's no grain. And Jacob said, "Why are you sitting here looking at one another?" And he said, "Indeed, I have heard there's grain in Egypt. And go down to that place and buy for us there that we may live and not die." And so the rest of Genesis 42 is the drama of 10 of the brothers going down to Egypt. And of course, the one who's providing the grain and selling the grain is Joseph, their brother, but they don't know it's Joseph. And there's a bit of drama that goes on, but they do return with the grain that they purchased back to Canaan, back to be with their father and their younger brother. But there's going to be 7 years of famine. And apparently they purchased enough grain to handle the first year. And so again, they have to go down to Canaan. Now in Genesis 43, verse 1, "Now the famine was severe in the land. And it came to pass when they had eaten up the grain which they had brought from Egypt, that their father said to them, 'Go back, buy a little food.'" Now you think they're feeding 80 plus people, so they're going to be bringing a significant amount of grain back from Egypt. The next two chapters, 43 and 44, as we read through it, I don't fully appreciate and understand why Joseph took his brothers through all the drama that he did. But there was a great deal of drama. And finally, they had the grain, they got off a bit, discovered what Joseph had done to them, and they had to come back and confront him. And finally, at the end of all this, we see in Genesis 45 and verse 4. Genesis 45 and verse 3. "Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. Does my father still live?' But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. And Joseph said to his brothers," they thought he had been dead for 22 years. That's the amount of time he was there, plus the 7 years of plenty, plus the 2 years of famine that's already occurred. So they hadn't heard anything of Joseph for 22 years. "Joseph said to his brothers, 'Please come near to me.' So that they came near, and they said, 'I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourself because you sold me here, for God provided me before you to preserve life.'" So Joseph looked into it and saw that it was God's hand that provided the miracle that he had able to explain to Pharaoh. And he then explains to his brother that we've only gone 2 years. The next verse. "For these 2 years of the famine have been in the land, and there are 5 years in which we will be neither plowing nor harvesting." And so now he instructs his brothers. At this point, all 11 brothers are in Egypt. In the second trip, all 11 came. And he says, "Go back," in verse 9, "'hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph.'" What a shock that had to be for Jacob. He thought his son had been killed several decades before. When they brought that word to the father, I'm sure he was stunned and at first didn't believe it was even possible. "And tell my father, God has made me Lord over all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me, you and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds, and all that you have. Therefore, I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty. For there are still 5 years of famine. And so Joseph tells that. The brothers then return to Canaan and tell the father. Now, Joseph was in this position to bless his family because he was greatly appreciated by Pharaoh. And he had been successful in assembling the grain over the 7 years. And as you read in later chapters of Genesis, what happened as a result of his successful assembling the grain and then selling it 1 year, 2 year, third year, fourth year, over that 7 year period, all the wealth of Egypt flowed into Pharaoh. At the end of the 7 years, Egypt was owned by Pharaoh and all the citizens were slaves. Now, that's jumping ahead of where we are in the story. But Joseph was extremely successful in what he did. So, Pharaoh was very glad to have Joseph there and wanted his family to come on down. And so we have two key individuals that will follow through the remainder of the sermon. One is Pharaoh. What were Pharaoh's intentions? What was he thinking as he agreed with Joseph and encouraged Joseph to bring his family to Egypt? Where was Pharaoh in the thin thinking? And how about Jacob? What were his thoughts? Remember, we're answering the question is, was Jacob going to stay in Egypt after the famine was over? To get a sense of this, we have to look and understand the sense of what was going on. Pharaoh made it very clear that he wanted Jacob and his family to come and just be a part of the nation of Egypt. Look what happened in Genesis 45 and verse 17, how he expresses himself. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Say to your brothers, do this, load your animals and depart to go to the land of Canaan." So this is taking the grain back. Load your animals, take the grain back to Canaan, bring your father and your household and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you will eat the fat of the land. Now you are commanded, do this, take carts out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and your wives. Bring your father and come. And do not be concerned at all. Do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. So what Pharaoh was saying, just bring your family. I'll provide everything else that you need. I'll provide the best lands for your herds. I'll provide homes and tents, which will be here for you. I'll provide dress and cooking utensils and tools. But we have them here. There's no need for you to bring all your stuff down from Canaan. And you have a job. We need herdsmen. The Egyptians don't like being herdsmen. And so everything is to your advantage. So what Pharaoh wanted to happen to this large family that was coming into Egypt with his invitation, he wanted Jacob's family to be assimilated into the Egyptian culture. He wanted them to adapt, to adjust, to learn the Egyptian language, to incorporate Egypt into their own ways of life, to conform to their customs, to be absorbed, to be taken in, to not be different at all. That's what Pharaoh wanted. That was his reasoning. That's what he said, just leave all your stuff in Canaan. He wanted that because he wanted this new family that was coming in. He didn't want them to bring in their own laws, bring with them their own customs, speak their old language. He didn't want them to be irritants in Egypt. He wanted them to fit in. Look, work, and live like a native. We see that playing out today in Europe and some other parts of the world where immigrants are coming in from the Middle East, but they're refusing to be absorbed. They're refusing to learn the language, the customs, and the new countries that they have come to. Now, was it logical for Pharaoh to think that Joseph's family would just fit in? Well, that's what had happened to Joseph. Joseph had become Egyptianized. Go back to Genesis 41 and watch what happened, what we learn about Joseph in just a couple of verses. Genesis 41 and verse 14. Genesis 41 and verse 14. Pharaoh has just been told about Joseph, the interpreter of dreams. And so in verse 14, then Pharaoh sent and called Jacob, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon. So he's in the dungeon when Pharaoh calls for him. Pharaoh has never met Joseph before. We don't see any indication of that at all. And what did Joseph do? And he shaved, changed his clothing, and came to Pharaoh. At that time, the tradition in Egypt was the men were without hair. They shaved their hair on their head, on their face. Occasionally, they had decorative facial hair. And what clothes were available for Joseph to put on? Egyptian clothes. So when he arrived at Pharaoh and then was given the promotion that he was given in that meeting, Pharaoh was looking at a man who looked like an Egyptian. And look what happened in verse 45 of the same chapter. Pharaoh gave Joseph a name, I'll not attempt to pronounce it, but translated it means treasury of gracious rest. He gave him an Egyptian wife, Asenath, and the father of his new wife was a priest of the Egyptian religion. Religion of On. Joseph had two half-Egyptian sons. By the time that Jacob arrived with the family, Joseph had been in Egypt for 22 years and he'd been successful the whole time. As a slave, he rose to the leadership of Potiphar's house. As a prisoner, he read the leadership of the administration of the prison where he was. The previous 9 years, he was the number two person in Egypt. Pretty spectacular run for a foreigner. Although Joseph had been born the son of Jacob and an Israelite, by the time Jacob saw his son, he had taken on the customs, the manner, and the language of Egypt. He had fit in. He was functioning as administrator there. Now I answer the question, did Jacob intend to stay after the famine was over? Let's follow Jacob for a bit and see what he said. What did he say to Pharaoh in Genesis 47 and verse 4? I'm reading the King James Version because a particular word is used there. Here's what he said in Genesis 47 and verse 4. Then said moreover unto Pharaoh, for to sojourn in the land are we come. For thy servants has no pasture for their flock. For the famine is sore in the land of Canaan. Now therefore we pray thee, let thy servant dwell in the land of Goshen. We didn't have anything. Come here to where we have a land of plenty that we can graze our crops. And so, remember Pharaoh had said, take these carts back, bring your wives and your children, and leave everything. You have plenty here in Egypt. But what did Joseph do? Jacob do? Genesis 46, verse 5. Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones, their wives, in the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry them. So at that point of the story, they're doing exactly what Pharaoh wanted. So they took their livestock, their goods, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and went to Egypt, and Jacob and all of his descendants with him. So they didn't just bring their livestock and their relatives. They brought everything that they had acquired up to that point. So they moved in, as we say sometimes, lock, stock, and barrel. They came with everything into Egypt. And when he arrived, he told Pharaoh that he was just here for a brief period of time. Genesis 46:31, we see Joseph is speaking. Then Joseph said to his brothers and his father's households, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, my brothers and those of my father's house who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock. And they have brought their flocks, their herds, and all they have. so it shall be when Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation, that you shall say, your servant's occupation has been with livestock from our youth, even till now, both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. And so there were events that happened in Jacob's life prior to his arrival in Egypt that helps us answer the question posed. Did he intend to stay there after the famine was over? Let's go back and pick up the story in Genesis 28. In Genesis 28, God has made himself visible to Jacob. Genesis 28. In verse 13. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham your father and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and to your descendants. So God says he was in the land of Canaan. I'm going to give that to you. Also your descendants will be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, and the south. And in you, in all your seed, all the families of the earth will be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. So God is telling Jacob, I'm going to bless you, I'm going to bless the world with you, and you will come back to this land. A little bit later in Genesis 35, we see that as he changed his name from Jacob to Israel, Genesis 28, let's do that first. Verse 28, God is again speaking. He says, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, which translated means prince with God, for you have struggled with God and with man and have prevailed. And so God renamed Jacob to the name Israel, which means prince with God. And then in chapter 35 in verse 9, we see this continuing. God again appears to Jacob. Then God appeared to Jacob again, and he came from Padan Aram and blessed him, and God said to him, your name is Jacob, your name shall not be Jacob anymore, but Israel shall be your name. So he called his name Israel. And so the land that's specified that he is God's person, God has given him a special name. And then in 35 verse 9 we see, let's go to 46 and pick up the last piece of promise. Just before Jacob leaves to go to Egypt, God appears to him this one additional time. In Genesis 46 and verse 3. And so he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. So God is assuring him. He was concerned. Jacob was, should I go down to Egypt? And he's assuring him, yes, go down to Egypt. I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hands on your eyes. And so God was telling him that you will go to Egypt, but I will bring you back. So at this point in his life, Pharaoh wanted Jacob to be here in Egypt and fit in. But Jacob, in his mind, based on the conversations he had, as God had told him very specifically, I'm supposed to be in Canaan. And that's where God is going to establish me and my progeny as a great nation. And so, how did that unfold? What happened? The famine comes to an end. What happened? Genesis 47. In verse 27. So Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions there and grew and multiplied exceedingly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. That's 12 years after the famine was over. So he stayed for an additional period of time. So the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. And when the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, "Now if I have favor in your sight." And so he asked him that after he died, Jacob had Joseph promise that he would take his body back to Canaan. And we see in 49 verse 29, that's exactly what happened. Speaking to Joseph and his brothers, then he charged them and said to them, "I am to be gathered to my people. Carry me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field that Abraham had brought. Take me back there, bury me there in the cave that is in the field, which is before in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought in the field from the Hittite." There they buried, and he remembers his grandfather Abraham and grandmother Sarah are there, Isaac and Rebekah, his father and mother, and he has already buried his wife Leah. She is there. And that is where Jacob wanted to be buried. And after his death, that's exactly what happened. Continue now in Genesis 50 and verse 12. We follow this actually as carried out by Joseph and his brothers. Genesis 50 verse 12. "So his sons did for him just as he had commanded them. For his sons carried him to the land of Canaan, buried him in the cave of the field, which Abraham had bought, the property for the burial place. And after he had been buried, after he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers, and all who went up with him to bury their father." So they all went down, up to Canaan, buried their father, and then they returned. So they returned to Egypt, the 11 brothers. They had left the children. I get the sense that maybe the wives had traveled, but the children and the herds had been left there. So they went back there. They had a good life while they were there. They had Joseph's protection. Joseph was the head, still the head, under Pharaoh. And so he cared for them. He protected them. He made sure they still had the land. They still had resources. They could live successfully. They were really tied to the land of Goshen. And they had grown. And we'll see that they had grown to be a very large family. Genesis 50 verse 22. So Joseph dwelled in Egypt, he and his father's household. And Joseph lived 110 years. And then we see several generations of Joseph's children are mentioned. And the brothers stay there after Joseph dies. And so it was a good period of time while Joseph was alive. While the Pharaoh that worked with Joseph and honored Joseph was alive. But in time, the political situation in Egypt changed for the Israelites. Joseph and the other brothers died. The Pharaoh changed. And Israelites became slaves. As slaves, they had no opportunity to leave. And while they were rich and prosperous in Egypt, it was hard to relocate. Why leave? So they stayed. And over a period of decades, they went from being honored to being slaves. And once they became slaves, they could not leave on their own. They had to be delivered by God. Israel, that great nation, had to be delivered by God. So let's bring this forward 3,700 years to 2017. And think, what is it that we have in common in this story? How does this relate to us? Where do we see the imagery that fits with us? Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 2. and see that being described by the apostle in his first letter. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. The phraseology he uses here is very graphic and makes the connections very easily for us. He writes, "But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people." Peter is writing to Christians. He's writing to us. Each of us fill these various descriptors. We are chosen to God. We're royal. We are holy. We're special. We're special because he bought us with a very high price, the death of his son. That's us. For what purpose? For what purpose? "That you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." What is that darkness that we've been brought from? And more importantly, what is the light that we have? The light that we have is that we have been called and given an understanding of God's master plan. How God is working it out for all humanity to be blessed. Remember, God told Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that in you all will be blessed. Indeed, that happened. We know that. So God's master plan deals with what we come to understand, how God is working with all humanity. But also, we know God's master plan as it relates to each of us. The God of all the universe called us, placed us in his body. And we practice this with the holy days every year. We are also sojourners, verse 11. Peter uses this exact same word that Jacob had used when he came into Egypt. "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims." Sojourners and pilgrims is how we're described. It's interesting. Go to Hebrews, please. Hold your place. We're going to come back. But please go to Hebrews chapter 11. And we see that the writer of Hebrews describes what we are. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 13. The first phrase, he's referring back to those he had mentioned in the previous verses, but he continues on. "These all died in faith, not having received the promise, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed them, that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth." Strangers and pilgrims on the earth. We own homes, we rent apartments, we have jobs. Our children are in school. Our parents and grandparents are buried in this land if they have died. We're pilgrims. We're sojourners. We sure are. Because look how we match the ones that are described here. "For those who say such declare plainly that they see a homeland, a future. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to call to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them." Like them, we're looking ahead to a city that Christ is preparing for us right now. Going back to 1 Peter 2, now in verse 12, "Have your conduct honorable among the Gentiles," he writes, "that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works which they observe glorify God in the day of visitation." So it is our example that sets us apart. We are different. We're sojourners. We're pilgrims. We can't change the world. But we can change how we live in the world. And as we come in contact with the world, that change makes a difference. And like ancient Israel, we are going to have a great miracle of deliverance. I found it interesting that today's Bible reading program, Egypt is, we're in chapter 12, Israel is starting the journey out of Egypt as we're reading today. God performed a miracle, and God is also performing a miracle in us. We started with a why question. Why do you like the spring holy days? I like the spring holy days because it teaches me, reminds me that the Son of God died paying the price for my sins, for all human sins. That God the Father accepted Jesus' death and resurrected him to his former life of full glory. He was the first fruits of the resurrection. We know what that means. There are future fruits that will be resurrected by God to be spirit, just as Christ was resurrected to be spirit as well. We who are his at his coming will be resurrected. We will be delivered. The story of ancient Israel is a story of God delivering Israel. The story of the New Testament is that God will deliver each of us because he loves us.